Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
123.
I was going to say
123.
123.
123.
I like that.
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. All right. And we had just started chapter 16.
Yes, we got through two texts. We're so excited to get through the rest of it.
Yeah. And quick recap. Chapter 16, as we said, we're continuing off of the banyan tree metaphor that we outlined in chapter 15.
The metaphor we love so much.
We love so much. We're going to always talk about banyan trees. And the two types of people, godly and ungodly. And I think it's interesting to remember the godly people, they live at the end of the tree that's closest to reality, to the supreme reality. Mm. And the ungodly people live at the end that's farther from reality. And we're talking...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say the ungodly in this case would be described as demoniac, right?
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, because the godly people act in ways that take them closer and closer to the ultimate reality. So higher up in the tree, in those branches, till eventually they attain liberation. But in contrast, the ungodly, they act in ways that take them further down away from reality and become more and more entangled. And by their actions, they spread disorder. They exploitate people and situations, disaster. They make the world a more hellish place.
Yeah, and we're going to learn all the ways in which that is the case, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. But just a quick recap of what we've covered so far. We talked about, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave a long list of qualities that one should, well, actually not should, but rather that one who is has a divine nature or who is endowed with divine nature has, right? All these positive qualities. And the first one we talked about was fearlessness. Mm. And Prabhupada made a reference to sannyasis and how they have to be fearless in order to do that preaching service that they do, because they have to fully believe and fully trust that Krishna is guiding them in the darkest of regions, and when they're the most alone, Krishna is always there with them in their hearts and knowing what their intentions are, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of a little bit of what we talked about. We also talked about knowledge and charity and self-control. And there's many more qualities to tackle now for the rest.
And I think what's important as we're listening, and if you're listening at home or in the car, I think these are also, it's such a good list of qualities that we need to cultivate within ourselves. And so as we go through this giant list, it is important to be self-aware, to be like, okay, what can I do better? Can I do better in one of these qualities? Where am I falling down in some of these qualities, and just trying to get to more godly and divine qualities is the whole purpose of this chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, amazing. So now we can jump back in. Yeah.
Yeah. The invocation, please.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
People.
Great. Right. We're still on my section. I will continue.
We got this.
Should I read the verse again or
no? Yes, please. Oh, yes, please.
Yes. Okay, so this is chapter...
Ooh, what if we take turns saying the qualities?
Oh, sure. I love that. Speedball
turns off.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yep. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness.
Purification of one's existence.
Cultivation of spiritual knowledge.
Charity.
Self-control.
Performance of sacrifice.
Study of the Vedas.
Austerity.
Simplicity.
Nonviolence. Oh, never mind.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Just so excited. Nonviolence.
Truthfulness.
Freedom from anger.
Oh, renunciation.
It's hard, see? God. Tranquility.
Aversion to fault finding.
Compassion for all living entities.
Freedom from covetousness.
Gentleness.
Modesty.
Steady determination.
Vigor.
Forgiveness.
Fortitude.
Cleanliness.
And freedom from envy and from the passion for honor.
These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharat, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature.
Woo-hoo! Nailed it.
See, saying things in a circle is hard.
That was so funny.
All right. Shamali, take it away. Where are we now?
Well, we were basically kind of talking about in the four different stages of life, what qualities are predominant for that stage. Mm-hmm. As we've said, of course, all of the qualities should be tried to... all of the stages to try to cultivate all of these qualities, mm-hmm. not just this stage, but maybe certain stages are more prominent for certain qualities. For example, the next one would be Vedic study is meant for brahmacharya or student life because, you know, of course, they're totally dedicated to that. So that would be when, you know, let's say if a young man or woman moves into an ashram and they're living the brahmachari or brahmacharini lifestyle of just really dedicating all their time to learning this spiritual science. Mm. And that's it. That's all they're doing. And in this phase, brahmacharis should have no connection with women. They should have a life of celibacy and engage the mind in the study of Vedic literature for cultivation of spiritual knowledge. That's not to say they can never associate with a woman, but when they leave the ashram, that's when, okay, I've worked on myself and I'm ready to enter a relationship and that phase of life.
Yeah, I like to think of it and the way that it comes to my mind after reading the Bhagavad Gita and like processing that is these are like timed sensitive,
right.
but now we've made them accessible for everyone. So what I mean by that is like, technically you were supposed to be in the brahmacharya, like ashram mm-hmm. from let's say ages, I don't know, five
to
18, mm-hmm. let's say, right? So for those 13 years of your life, your focus maybe shouldn't be if you are a man, well, it shouldn't be the opposite gender. That's the easiest way to say that. And it should be to really learn as much as you can about the purpose of life,
right.
who you are, like all of this spiritual transcendental knowledge.
Yeah.
That time is like the best for cultivating all these qualities within ourselves so that we can move on to the next stage. And then when you get to the next stage, which is grihastha, then you can be a good partner because you have all of this knowledge that you can, you know, carry through to the family right. system. So it right. was meant to be sort of like stages of life that were followed in a certain way. And nowadays, you know, people meet Krishna when they're at whatever age. It right. doesn't really matter. It's not quite the same system. So then you can be a brahmachari and be 48 years old. And that's totally okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It just means at that time, the main focus should be to study.
Right.
Right.
You know, it's funny because I grew up, well, like you, Priya, we both grew up in the movement, but I never lived in an ashram. I lived across the street from the temple with my family.
Right.
So I never, while learning about the philosophy, I never experienced the more rigid rules and regulation side of the movement, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I was like traveling around following my spiritual master, there was one time in London where I stayed in the ashram or even in different places. And I was like, oh boy, there's a lot of rules. There's a lot of restrictions. Mm-hmm. I didn't live this life. I lived just a more like, I'm free to be me, Hare Krishna lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It is. It's like it's not meant to be restricting, but it's meant to be like very focused.
Yeah. A lot of discipline.
A lot of discipline. And that can be really challenging, but it's a wonderful quality to develop.
Oh,
so
yeah.
to do it at the beginning stages of any process, it's like great, you know?
Absolutely.
I think it is important to establish rules, especially when people are that age, like younger, because mm-hmm. that sets us up for like, what are the appropriate boundaries and whatnot. And I think if like everyone went through this phase of like studying and knowledge is the most important thing, mm-hmm. we would have a completely different society.
Oh yeah.
Maybe a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I got to like study and learn the philosophy. I was also growing up a competitive ice skater. So I got the discipline and training in that world. So it was an interesting blending for me personally of worlds.
For mm-hmm. sure. Society nowadays makes it so that it's not as, like we were talking about in the last, maybe a couple of episodes back, we were talking about like society is less simple, but it doesn't mean that you don't get some of the same things, right? Like you're still getting disciplined in different ways. But back then it used to be much, much simpler. You just study the Vedas, you know, learn about Krishna. And that's what you do for the first, you know, 13 years of your life that you can speak
Sounds
and
nice.
Stuff.
Yeah. Next comes tapas. What do you think of when you think of that?
Oh, tapas are tiny little meals that you eat with your friends.
In Spain.
In Spain.
It means austerity. The opposite.
Oh, not tapas. Meals. That's what I... okay,
that's what you meant. So that is especially... I mean, in all phases, we should practice different austerities and not overindulge, but that is especially meant for retired life. So one shouldn't remain a householder throughout our entire life. But, you know, we should remember there are four divisions of life, the brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Sannyas
is good.
Yeah. So So once we live our whole household duties, we raise a family, you know, it's just think of the natural order of life. Are you going to be taking care of your children the rest of your life? No. Mm-hmm. At one point, the children move on. They live their own lives. And, you know, you kind of enter retirement. But what do you do with your life in retirement is so crucial. And in modern day society, there's nothing that really distinguishes most people when they think of retirement. They think, all right, I'm going to go to the Bahamas and ultra enjoy now that I'm at this phase of life.
Or I'm going to sit in a garden.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just I'm going to do things that I love. And yeah, that can be there. Do things that you love. But also in the Vedic conception, that should be a time where we're preparing ourselves for the ultimate test because death is right around the corner. You might have, it's like the last chapter of your life. And what are you going to do will determine your next life. That's huge if you think of it in that way.
And I think this is easier said than done for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, like you after you have a family, you should retire and then you should leave everything behind. And I'm just looking at my own family and I was like, my mom is still so attached to her kids. Aww. When she's in retirement and she should be moving towards the next one, but like she still cares about like her kids and is attached to their well-being. And I was like, dude, like we're really old. Like you need to move on and think about the next step. But that just goes to show you like there's so much attachment that is built in so many different phases of this. And like letting go is the ultimate test.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah,
it is a balance because a mom, I feel like will always have the heart of a mom. They'll always care, but also then trying to shift the focus in, okay, now I have to like turn my energy eyes inwards and practice, I don't know, study the philosophy more. Yeah. My spiritual life is the priority.
I think it is harder for moms to like let go. And she worries my brother. I'm like, my brother's like 42. Like, relax. Like, he can handle himself. Aww. But I think there's that attachment that is so strong to children that I'm just seeing it. And it's so much easier said than done to let go. And all right, now I have to focus on the last portion of my life. Yeah. It's also, there's a fear built in too, because you're like, oh crap, that means I'm going to die soon. And there's a fear there. Oh my God, this is like actually going to happen. I need to face that final test.
For sure. And I think also in our perspective, it's also easier said than done because we think like, oh yeah, of course, when I get to that stage, of course I'm going to retire and I'm going to focus solely on Krishna and just, you know, have a lot of, do a lot of sacrifice to just really get into that mood of full surrender. Like, of course. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, of course. I mean, naturally, that's what will happen, right? But even if you think about like our lives, like you were saying, Shyamali, like you didn't go to an ashram and study and I didn't either. Like I didn't grow up in that environment. So sometimes it's like, that's naturally going to happen. But no, like it all takes effort and like, it sounds a lot easier than it is, but it also isn't impossible because tons of people do it, right? So
yeah, exactly. And there's so many ways to maximize the time. Like let's say you're driving to work, you can put a class or a lecture. There's little pockets of time that we can always...
As vanaprastas?
Oh, I was just thinking if you're in the householder life and feel like maybe either you joined Krishna consciousness late or found it late and you didn't get a time to study.
Oh, got it.
That's okay. Whatever phase you can study with whatever time you have.
We're doing it now ourselves. Like we're not, we are grihastas, technically sort of skipped, you know, the brahmachari stage in some ways, you know, so we're all doing it now. It's totally fine.
Right. Yeah. It's not a rigid model. Absolutely. And then it basically says, so these are the regulations of the Vedic religion, religious disciplines. So a man who's retired from household life must practice austerities of the body, mind, and tongue. That is tapasya. But then it goes to say the entire Varnashram Dharma society is meant for tapasya.
So wait, can you say that last part before? Yeah. Like what is a person is supposed to control the what?
Austerities, they should practice austerities of the body, mind, and tongue. You know, so
that's really,
that's
lovely.
Everything. That's everything we say, everything we do, our words, our actions. It's mindfulness. When we read it might sound rigid, but it's just being totally mindful and aware of what are we putting out there with our words, with our actions.
Yeah, not only mindfulness, that's a really beautiful way to think about it, but also it is, I think, because you are in preparation to be able to go back to Krishna, right? At the time of death. Mm-hmm. The idea is that what you're saying is furthering that process. So you're always talking about Krishna and having those kinds of thoughts about Krishna in conversations. And then we're using our body. Like everything is dovetailed, which is a very ISKCON word, towards Krishna, whatever you, you're gardening to to have vegetables for Krishna. You're doing like everything is in that mood to get your mind ready so that your thoughts at the time of death are Krishna. Mm.
And I think it's important if we're all old ladies together to remind each other of that, because we're all going to die soon and we're relatively the same age. But like if we get old together, you know, it's like someone is talking nonsense. We have to bring each other back, because at that point we could die at any point. We could die tomorrow. But like, I think it's important to have people around you that keep you in check with that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's where fearlessness can also come into play, because having to speak honestly what's on your heart and mind takes courage. Just thinking of the first of this laundry list, fearlessness. Mm-hmm. So basically, though, Prabhupada says the entire Varnashram Dharma, or all the different phases of society, is meant for tapasya, because without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And you know, Prabhupada says there's so many different, like, I don't know, maybe different communities, show bottle spiritualists, he calls them, that are just trying to gain more followers and don't want to say anything too uncomfortable. So they're like, no, you don't have to be too uncomfortable. You don't have to do too much austerity or regulation. But it's like, no, there is a place for that. Mm-hmm. And we do need to challenge ourselves. So the final one is, as far as the Brahminical quality of simplicity is concerned, that's not just for one particular order of life, but every single member, we should always be very simple and straightforward, because you can have a complex intellectual mind, but it takes intelligence also to speak things simply and straightforward.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. My favorite.
And I'm so ready to pass the baton to Astalal.
Oh, wow.
You mean Shama Sangeeta?
I mean Shama Sangeeta.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I got nonviolence, which is ahimsa. One should not think that since the spirit spark is never killed after eating an killing, oh my God. I'm just like off to a great start.
I was like
here.
Listening so intently, and then I was like, I don't know what just happened.
All right, I'm just going to speak. Because, okay, so ahimsa is nonviolence, that means not killing things, right?
Yes.
What's crazy is that Prabhupada talks about how in society, like, we're all addicted to eating animals now. Mm. And one thing that he mentions is so interesting. He says the animals are also making progress in their evolutionary life by transmigrating from one category of animal life to another. Okay, now here's the kicker, okay? If a particular animal is killed, then his progress is checked. If an animal staying in a particular body for so many days or so many years is untimely killed, which so many animals are, then he has to come back in that form of life to complete the remaining days in order to be promoted to another species of life.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Wild?
That's so sad.
And we, we kill so many animals on an untimely basis, right? I was literally
society,
society in general, not the three of us. We're not killing animals. I mean, I don't think we are, but just society in general. I looked up how many animals get slaughtered for meat every single day in just one day. 900,000 cows.
Oh my gosh.
1.4 million goats. 1.7 million sheep. 3.8 million pigs. Wow. 12 million ducks. 202 million chickens. And hundreds of millions of fish just in one day.
In the U.S. or around the
world?
This
is around the world.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? Oh,
that made me feel so uncomfortable.
And so, right, if Prabhupada, like what Prabhupada is saying is so wild, right? Because if we kill them untimely, which all of these animals are killed untimely, then we are actually stopping their progress in the evolution.
They have
so
to
that
be
they,
born again.
Yes, in that same body. And so imagine the karma that people take on when they kill animals. It's like you're not only obviously killing and harming these animals, but you're also responsible for them not moving on. That is wild.
That is so wild.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Crazy. I thought, I don't know what I thought. I guess I just thought they'll go on to the next birth.
Like, I thought mercy. But also, like, that's a weird way to think about it too, because that makes sense that
they haven't completed that cycle and have to do it again. Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, I really thought like, okay, well, I mean, at least that I condone killing because we don't engage in it, but I just thought, okay, they're moving on to the next birth.
Yeah, same. I thought the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Wow. Yeah. So their progress should not be checked simply to satisfy one's palate. This is called ahimsa.
That you just blew my mind a little.
Isn't that crazy?
That I'm just, whoa.
Yeah.
But like then imagine, my brain is just going all over the place. Just imagine then like how specifically awful it is to be born in this society at this time, in this part of Kali Yuga, to be born a chicken, a cow, like all of these specific animals, right? Like,
it's so wild. So I think like living an ahimsa life is really important for someone who wants to get closer to Krishna. Encouraging others to live an ahimsa life is very important as well. Yeah.
And that untimely killed probably only applies to by a human, right? Because they're untimely killed by animals all the time.
That, well, who knows? That might animal be, that might be karmic or it might not.
Yeah. That definitely untimely due to humans. For sure.
That seems so.
Like if they were out in the wild, you know.
Like that's more normal.
Yeah. Yep. So wild.
Okay, wow.
All right. So that's important, ahimsa. The next one is satyam. This word means that one should not distort the truth for some personal interest, right? Mm. So always telling the truth, always learning from a bona fide spiritual master and hearing from authority. Mm. The real import of the world should be presented and that should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master.
Mm.
Yeah. The importance of truth telling.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I love that because it's not just tell the truth, but it's also just don't distort the truth for some personal interest, right? Because a lot of people are like, well, it's not a lie if I didn't say anything or if I, you know, like some sort of way. But
and that could even mean, let's say you're trying to cultivate a higher lifestyle and you're still surrounded by people who don't see things the same way you do. Of course, there's a time, place and circumstance. So you don't want to say something that'll totally repel them from any form of spiritual life. But it's finding a way to say what you believe in and not just being like a yes person. Like, oh, God, you're right. Like, no. If you're trying to cultivate a higher lifestyle and you don't agree with something, maybe find a nice way if the person's close to you to be able to say it.
Yeah, I learned this lesson actually when I went to India. Well, I'm learning this lesson, but it was the first time I've ever encountered this position where I was at a place where, I was speaking to a woman who was spiritual, but had a different conception of spirituality than our own.
Okay.
And I think the message that she kind of said was like, at the end of the day, like it's all the same. Huh. And in that part, I could somewhat agree to some degree, right?
Right, right.
But then she was like, it doesn't matter who you worship, like Krishna or this or that or that. And that's where I didn't. And in that moment, I froze and I didn't know what to say.
Right.
Because in one way, I didn't want to be discouraging to someone who's exploring their spiritual path. And then in another way, like, but as someone who's been reading the Bhagavad Gita and who has been in this philosophy for so long, like in that moment, looking back, I thought I should have more of a stance because in that moment I should say, well, no, Krishna is ideally the ultimate way. Of course you can do it other ways, but they're more indirect ways and just be more clear because it could have been a moment for her to observe Krishna or learn something about Krishna that she might not know.
Right.
And I didn't allow that to be the case because I was afraid of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So totally. Like, it is hard. It is hard when you're on the spot and you think, oh no, wait, because you don't want to offend someone. You don't want to repel them further. So it's a practice to try to find the way to speak like, no, this is what I think is true, but speak it in a way that's, because it would also be counterproductive to say something that would push them further than they are. So finding the way to do it is hard.
Oof, in that moment, I was just tongue-tied and I was just like,
It happens.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. The next one is akroda, which means to check anger. What I like about this, Prabhupada says, even if there is a provocation, one should be tolerant. For once one becomes angry, his whole body becomes polluted. And I think that word polluted is so interesting because even if you think about from like a scientific perspective, like the chemicals that are released in your body when you become angry, right? There's like adrenaline, nepheferrin. Do you see it?
I can't say it.
So this is not in the Gita. Shama looked up what's released when the body.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's nepheferrin. Okay. If anybody knows how to say that, please send us a voice note on our Instagram at Modern Yogi.
Oh my goodness.
Cortisol and serotonin. And so like you can literally feel like your body shifting when you get angry, right?
Not only that, but it clouds your judgment. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Like it's like psychologically and physiologically proven that in that moment, you're not able to process information the same way.
Yep.
Mm, yeah. Interesting.
That's wild. So anger is a product of the mode of passion and the mode of, and lust actually.
Yeah.
So what's so crazy, and I think, and this might be controversial, but let me know. But I think that in addition to being Krishna conscious, I think that we all need to practice exercises like breathing and pranayama to learn how to calm our body and our mind. Mm. In addition to practicing Krishna consciousness, I feel like if you're a devotee and you're like chanting 16 rounds, but you're not taking any time for mindfulness and learning how to regulate your body through breath, I think you can be more susceptible to these things. Mm. Thoughts, controversy? I don't know.
No, I think you have a valid point. I've heard it explained this way that, because I think for some people, they reach a state of elevation where they're totally able to just close their eyes and go within with all of their rounds that they do. And they develop like a pattern of breathing where they're chanting and it is their meditation.
Sure.
If you can't do that, then I totally agree that, you know, if I'm chanting and I'm not at the stage where it washes me with peace and I'm mm-hmm. able to do that form of meditation, then okay, do some breathing to calm yourself down. And then chant.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right. If your chanting can help you get to that place where you are not agitated in moments of provocation, amazing.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of us
are
not at that place. And I think in addition to practicing bhakti yoga, there should be some form of breath work or pranayama to help calm the body.
And I think every person is different and different types of angers are there too. So I would also say mental health is such an important part because something I've discovered over the years is that some people's experience of life is that the only emotion that they really knew how to express like some people are conditioned to kind of be like, don't be sad, don't be this, don't be that, right? Especially men in society. Yeah. But and so then the only emotion that is known how to express is anger, right? And so it's just like trying to figure out like how, you know, like our karma, but like what experiences we've had that created this maybe anger in our body, how to release it. That's also just therapy is so helpful to be able to process all these things in a deeper way.
And that's a huge point you said, Priya, especially for men. Not that there's not to stereotype, but it's very true that for a lot of men, they feel uncomfortable to, I think women have more of a space and have been given more of a space to feel comfortable expressing like, hey, what you said hurt my feelings. But for a guy that might feel like unmanly and they get angry instead of saying like, I'm hurt right now.
Yeah. Right. It's hard for a dude to say, dude, that hurt my feelings. And rather just like, they'll just outburst in different ways because they don't know how to say it.
Yeah. And even if you're chanting 16 rounds, that might still be something that you have some trouble with and that's okay. And so there's where other means for controlling anger could be helpful, obviously. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, some, you know, meditation, breathing exercises, some therapy and just, you know, that kind of stuff. It all can help.
Yeah,
totally.
All right. The next one is apasunam.
You got all the tough ones.
I know, right?
Apasunam.
Apasunam.
Yeah, maybe true.
Means that one should not find fault with others or correct them unnecessarily. This one is a tough one. I mean, Prabhupada said, of course, one, to call a thief is not fault finding, but to call an honest person a thief is very much often offensive for people who are trying to make advancement. And I think that I see this all the time in the devotee community, and I see this sometimes within myself, to be honest. And I think that we just need to be more compassionate towards other devotees and also people who are not devotees.
Because, you know, I think, and I heard a class, Keshav Swami give a class on this, or it might have been a portion of it, that he was saying, if we ultimately want to help everyone make advancement, before we want to, like, it's about being able to also receive feedback and give feedback. Mm-hmm. And before we give feedback, we should ask ourselves, how will this affect the person? You know, will they take it? Will it push them further away? Is it the right timing? Am I the right person to give it? And do I have the right motivation to give it? Mm. Do I just want to, for my own ego, be like, Prabhu, you're totally wrong right now, you know? Or like, am I genuinely wanting to help them? So we have to ask ourselves a few things before we give feedback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see this very prevalent in our community, and I just think that like we just need to be better with this.
Right.
I feel like I just did it to you. You said the word, and then I was like, it has an eye, a pie.
That's hilarious.
Correcting you unnecessarily. It could have been without. So no, you know, no, we don't even notice.
It's, yeah. The next one, it's called acapalum. Okay. I got it. It sounds like an alpaca, but acapalum, which is determination. Okay. And I love this one. This is one of my favorites of the list. It means that one should not be agitated or frustrated in some attempt. There may be failure in some attempt, but one should not be sorry for that. He should make progress with patience and determination. And I feel like we are so hard on ourselves, whether it's in our spiritual life or material life. And there's this cringiness with failure that we have as a society. And I think that this is so beautiful for Krishna to say that don't even worry, just like be determined, and you know, failure is okay. And yeah, just keep going with patience and determination.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think I've noticed for myself, even with small things, for example, the other day I was doing some physical therapy exercises for my back. And one exercise that I was reading the description, it was new. And I was like, I had this inner feeling of, I don't even know how to do this exercise. Ugh. And you almost like a resistance to want to start it. But then I thought, no. Because if I start it, even if I'm doing it wrong, I'll go figuring it out. And the more times I did it, the more I figured out, oh, it's this way and that way. So oftentimes we put up a block that we can't even start something because we need to have it perfect right off the bat.
Yeah.
But if we start it, we'll go figuring it out through trial and error.
Totally. That I think that happens to everyone literally all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think earlier on in my Krishna conscious journey, there was that notion of like just giving up if I can't do it 100% properly, right?
Right.
Like if I can't follow all the regs and if I can't chant, then what's the point of all of it? And I think because I'm just going to fail. I know myself and I know what my temptations are and I'm going to fail. And I think that as I've grown older, I think that Krishna appreciates the attempt. And he literally is saying it right here.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that every single day is a brand new day. So if you can chant Krishna's names or offer some water or some blueberries and the next day you can't, that's okay.
Yeah,
like just keep going, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that every single day is a new day, and patience and determination are so crucial in our relationship with Krishna.
Yeah. And you don't have to be in the perfect mindset to, like, sometimes with this perfectionistic tendency I think like, oh, if I listen to a class I want to be like totally attentive, taking notes, blah blah blah, and then I won't do it if not, and then the weeks pass and you don't do it.
Yeah.
So then the other day I thought, you know what, I've had a horrible day. Let me just put whatever class driving home. Even if I can't hear everything, it's just there. And I felt so nice. And I thought, oh, okay. I can do things imperfectly for a while.
100%. Yeah. That's the biggest thing to remember. Just do things imperfectly, because eventually you will do them in a much more quote unquote perfect way. And it's just, you got to just get started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Show of hands, how many of you have ever fell asleep in a class?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay, right?
Some of them on purpose. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Not on purpose. Just like, you know, retreat. You're so tired. You're like, I'm going to sleep through this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or when you feel yourself nodding off and it's like you feel like the heaviness of your head.
Oh, my God. Right? We've all been there. It's imperfect and that's okay.
Yeah.
And just keep going, you know? Sometimes it's okay to take a nap during a lecture.
Well,
yeah. Oh, did I say that out loud? Okay, cool. Meant to say that in my head.
All right. She wakes up. What a great snooze. Perfect timing. Ready for prashad.
Chapter 16? Okay, let's go. I just slept through the first 16 chapters. Okay. The next one is the word tejas is is meant for the kshatriyas, actually. And they should always be very strong and be able to give protection to the weak. What's interesting is that they should never pose themselves as nonviolent, because it's true. Violence, if it is required, it must be exhibited. And I think this is true. My partner is a veteran, used to be like a soldier in the army. And she's very much like there is so much evil in this world. Like, good people cannot be nonviolent because then evil will prevail. And I think that is very true for what's happening on the battlefield right now.
Right.
Like, Krishna is telling Arjuna to check these demoniac people, right?
Totally. Yeah. If not, they'll just totally take over and the good people are like, please don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. That's super fascinating. So do you think the word Tejas means strength, or what do you, I'm not saying you have to know, but just given the context, what do you guys think it means?
That's a really good question.
I'm gonna look it up in the meantime, but
Tejas means the direct translation.
I'm seeing it in the like vigor. Word for word. Vigor. Interesting.
Vigor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. I know what vigor means. We're like, yeah, so good. Vigor definition. It means. Yeah. Very well then. Vigor means physical strength and good health. Right.
Nice.
So, I think that's also appropriate, even for non kshatriyas. I think like maintaining the body, being healthy, being strong is important, so that we can prolong our life to practice Christian consciousness more and spread Absolutely. Christian consciousness.
Definitely.
Cool. And sukham means cleanliness. That's another quality that we must have as devotees and people trying to pursue this path, not only in mind and body, but in one's dealing as well.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Krishna gives an example of for business people not to deal in black market.
Right.
So being clean in literally body, mind, spirit.
Right.
Very nice.
Clean in how we express our sentiments, how we speak to it. Yeah, it can be everything.
Yeah.
I like it.
The next one is nati manita. That's a spicy one. Nati manita.
She's like, not a margarita. Nati manita. Who's manita and why is she so naughty?
So good. That is hilarious. Nati manita. Spicy.
I bet Sanskrit scholars are like, if they hear modern yogi, they'll be cringing.
They're face palming. They're face palming their face right now.
Oh my God.
Nati manita.
Nati manita.
Means to not expect honor.
I don't even know what the right way to say that anyways.
As nati manita.
I don't think that.
And you have to like move your shoulders up and down right. As you say
oh,
it.
Man.
Nati manita. If you're listening right now, say nati manita and move your shoulders up and down.
Oh, that's so good.
And so this applies to everyone, especially.
Wait, what did it mean again?
Oh, it means not expecting honor.
So don't be a nati manita.
Yeah, don't be a nati manita.
I love that.
And yeah, it's that kind of wraps everything up. And all of these 26 qualifications are transcendental qualities. And if we practice them, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization.
Beautiful.
Wow.
That was a big one. We got through it, guys.
Purport. High five.
Wow.
That was also really cool. I feel like even though we've talked about ahimsa before and some of these other things before, it was a slightly new take on it and more information in a really fun way.
Yeah.
So
the goal here is to try to cultivate as many of these qualities as we can in our lifetime.
Nice.
Okay.
Okay. Let's
text 4.
Text four.
Hallelujah.
Shama Sangeeta?
Sure.
Shama Sangeeta.
All right. Krishna is saying, pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, these qualities belong to those of demoniac nature.
Wow.
O son of Pritha. So I'll just repeat those qualities. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance are not good, the bad qualities.
They're bad.
Yeah.
I have a question because text 1 through, what was the last one? 3 described the good qualities. Mm-hmm. Now starting at text 4, we're getting into the end. We're getting into the negative demoniac qualities. Why does Krishna, and I heard someone give this answer nicely, but at first, if I would have read the question that I'm about to say, I wouldn't know. Why does Krishna describe the demonic nature more than the divine nature? He only spends 3 texts that we just finished on the divine nature. And starting at this one, 4 till the end, he's going to talk about different demonic natures.
Because we're all demons.
Sure.
Mostly.
I mean, first and foremost, the first text was bigger than all the other texts. So I feel like, why are we comparing? I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I just think that these are so much more prevalent than the good ones. I think that he's trying to teach us something here.
Like he's trying to be very specific about what demoniac nature looks like. Because he's already spent a lot of the book talking about qualities that Krishna has that we drive. Maybe right, part right. of that is the answer That's, also.
I think mm-hmm. those are also great. Not mine, but that I definitely think is part of it. Yeah, we did spend so much of the Gita on qualities of Krishna, all that. So what I heard one class on was through these descriptions, Krishna's indirectly reminding Arjuna of A, the importance of his divine nature, and B, his Kshatriya duty, both which require Arjuna to protect the world from such demonic rulers. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to kind of like, this is out there to rile him up for what his duty is. Mm-hmm. So given Krishna's purpose in activating the protector within Arjuna, he describes the horrors of the demonic nature over 18 verses, text 4 to 22, after summarizing the divine nature in just 3 verses. And I thought that's so interesting. Wow. You picture it almost like a boxing match. That they're like, you go get the competitor. Go, go, go. Yeah, this is what they're like.
This is what they're doing. This yeah. is what they look like. This
yeah.
is what
he's hyping boom, him up. Boom. This is what they look like. This is what they look like. This is what they smell like. This is what they look like. This is what they do. Go get him, Arjuna.
I love it.
Yeah. Cool. So that's what we're about to embark on.
Wow, exactly. You said text 4 to 22?
Mm-hmm.
So the next whole bunch of verses are going to be about demon qualities. Cool.
Exactly.
Cool.
So the first few ones are pride. Arrogance.
Yeah, and I think we talked about pride, like pride cometh before the fall, being humble.
What pride?
That was like a
pride cometh before the fall. No?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Anything else on pride?
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't have it. Don't go there.
Wait, didn't you say that the purports were really lovely and
yeah,
we should, that's what we're doing.
Yeah,
pinball one sentence at a time, which we have to work on, but we're going to do it right now. It's hard to go
practice
in a circle.
Makes perfect.
We got this.
Priyadarshini.
Okay, so just to be clear, there's some pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance, all bad qualities.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to the purport.
Okay.
In this verse, the royal road to hell is described.
Oh, wow. Okay. Whoa. All right. We're going there.
We're going down the royal road to hell.
Okay. The demoniac want to make a show of religion and advancement in spiritual science, although they do not follow the principles.
They are always arrogant or proud in possessing some type of education or so much wealth.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Can I say one thing? That just doesn't even sound like a demon. That sounds like we think demons to be these gruesome figured things, but this could be just anybody. Like,
totally.
I have a doctorate. I have a PhD. I have lots of money.
And I think you're right. As we go through these next set of verses, I think like demon sounds so crazy, but I think these are just bad qualities that literally we all possess that we all need to work on.
Absolutely. Demons that exist in all of us.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Where were we?
They desire
to be worshipped by others and demand respectability, although they do not command respect.
Mm.
Oof, we can think of a few people.
You have to
people.
Like earn Oof. The respect. Yeah.
Wow. 100%, I can think of a couple.
Well, we were talking about general, not people we know.
Sure.
We don't hate our friends.
Sure.
That's not what we meant.
I can think of one person.
We were talking just general, before we even filmed this one, we were talking about like how sometimes politicians fall under this category of demoniacs. So anyways.
Totally.
But there's also like people...
Yeah,
that we know. Yeah, okay, cool. What?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, sorry, we weren't going to go there? Okay, cool. All right, cool. Over trifles, they become very angry and speak harshly, not gently.
They do not know what should be done and what should not be done.
They do everything whimsically, according to their own desire, and they do not recognize any authority.
Mm. These demoniac qualities are taken on by them from the beginning of their bodies in the wombs of their mothers. And as they grow, they manifest all these inauspicious qualities.
Interesting.
So like, it's not a choice. You were born this way. I'm kidding.
Baby, I was born this way.
That's like nature versus nurture. Like we all come into this world with a certain nature.
Yes.
But now we can do things and practices to enhance our nature or mitigate it.
Yeah.
Wow. If that's the beginning of what we're about to hear, I am fascinated
this
already.
This is very interesting. Yeah.
And you know what? It's an interesting roadmap to, as we said, demons, we might think of these like, with these green witches and like monsters. But no, these are also the demonic qualities and the mode of goodness qualities that exist in all of us. And if we know them, we can be aware that, oh, is this, because it's all subtle in this realm. Is this subtly motivating why I want to do or say something? Is it coming from pride or is it really coming from selflessness? You have to question yourself and retrospect and analyze your own self. So this is a good roadmap of like, Can I see myself in these?
I think, honestly, it's so important to be self-aware during this chapter. Yeah. Because like, I know there are days where I can be angry or harsh with my words or even arrogant with certain things. And so I literally think this is a good check yourself chapter where you have to really be self-aware and be humble and check yourself.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And one clarification. So far, Krishna hasn't said that, oh, these are qualities of a demon necessarily. I mean, he is saying that, but the exact phrasing is these qualities belong to those of demoniac nature. So it's a nature, right?
Yeah, a demoniac personality or a person with that nature could look beautiful and angelic on the outside.
Mm-hmm. But then you would see that they exhibit these signs. So, this is super interesting, but I think we might be at the end of the episode.
So please join us next time as we tackle chapter 16, text number 5.
Wow. See you next time.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.